Christoph is not very good. His show is not very good. It's not very interesting. When he decides they're done with Laura Linney, they just introduce a beautiful woman for him to meet at the office. It is boring. He's not willing to push the boundaries. He creates the most boring version of a 1950s television show that he can, but makes one of the characters a real person. Mm-hmm. That's not that good.
He's
right?
A real Ryan Murphy.
No, hey now. Well, people are just catching strays. Ryan Murphy's taking it? That's not fair to Ryan Murphy.
I'm sorry. Absolutely. He's that, but you with it, like, just outlandish shit. You're just like, oh, really? This is, we're going to hacksaw Ariana Grande to death in episode 3? Oh, so exciting.
I just think it is creative.
I'm Max Fisher.
I'm John Lovett.
I'm Erin Ryan.
This is Offline Movie Club. Every episode, we discuss one of our favorite movies and how it reflects or shapes how we think about technology and the internet. This week, we are talking about The Truman Show, the 1998 movie about a reality show contestant who realizes he must escape the show whatever it takes in order to get back to the progressive podcast company he co-owns in time for the election. Thank you for dawdling that.
Sure.
It's not going to be the last. I'm so sorry.
No, I was watching and I was like, oh, this is going to bite me.
Yeah. No, it's a Truman Show is about a man who realizes his entire life has been an elaborate reality show in which everyone around him is an actor. John, Erin, it's time to accept the reality of the world with which we are presented.
Mm-hmm.
Erin, what to you makes this movie important for how we think about technology and the internet?
Well, I'm immediately going to get academic, but it reminds me of like the digital panopticon that we all like live inside right now. Like we have kind of willingly put us in positions where we can be surveilled at all times. And even though we're not interesting and maybe we're not the star of the show, we could be made the star of the show at any moment. And marketers have access to you as though you are the star of the show because of everything that you've put out there in the surveilling implements that are all around us all the time.
Yeah, it is very much about we were all going to be part of the Truman Show at some point in our lives, and we're all both dreading and pining for that in some weird way. Mm-hmm. John, what do you think?
I think for me, it's the flip side of that, which is the voyeurism that people are willing to participate in, even though everyone on some level understands that what's happening to this person is morally reprehensible, and yet they watch it. And the fact that a meta culture exists around how, like, both, you know, we see it in the form of like the activism that takes place around the Truman Show in this world, but also it is clearly on the minds of the viewers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how does this end? How will he escape? And so you have all these people participating in something they know to be wrong, enjoying as the thing itself, while also enjoying the prospect of it falling apart, which is, I think, a big way we all consume media we're morally ambivalent about.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt very relevant to
you
me.
Get to
how
be,
does it end? The button that Natasha McElhone's character was.
And you get to be sort of both the person that is in the person that is the pursuer and then the person that celebrates the victory as well. Like you get to identify with the people watching, you know, you are consuming the content, but at the same time, like you get to be a good person when you're happy that he gets out, you know?
There is a kind of unacknowledged, like, weird sickness that the audience is both cheering for him to escape, but also has been participating in his imprisonment for years.
Yeah.
Right. It's never spoken in the movie. Well, so what's interesting is I was watching this closely because I was thinking about it, and what I was curious about is there a moment in the film The Truman Show where the Truman Show is not on? And there's only one.
Yeah.
There's only one moment when the Truman Show is not on, including a moment, I also include it being on, is when there's technical difficulties. It's only the moment where she runs down the stairs. For the rest of the movie, you are watching The Truman Show.
Right.
You are watching The Truman Show on a television. You are watching people who are watching The Truman Show. It's on. You can't see it, but you are the TV.
So right. It's faded at the edges so that you have like a voyeuristic. That. Yeah.
And so the only moment in the entire movie where you are not in some way consuming the Truman Show in The Truman Show is when she's running down the stairs.
Right.
That's it.
That's
one moment.
They do put so much emphasis on that shot too. The like score is really soaring for that shot. It's the kind of you realize that he's going to escape.
Yeah, I went to the premiere and obviously I'm bragging, of the Hunger Games. And I never consumed the Hunger Games. I just went for fun. Like, I'm sure. I wasn't a big fan. I was like, oh, a big fun movie. I'll go, it'll be interesting. And there's a moment in the Hunger Games where the hero and the hero's friend, Rue, I think is the name.
I don't know.
They're being attacked by two other children. Mm-hmm. And they survive the attack. And one of the older children gets killed. Mm-hmm. Now, in the world of the Hunger Games, you might... I'm glad the bad kids died and the good kids didn't.
Right.
But as a viewer of the film, you're supposed to know that these are all victims of the Hunger Games.
Right. Uh-huh.
But the crowd went wild in the premiere. And then you look around and you're like, you're not watching a movie about the Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm.
You were watching a Hunger Game.
Yes.
It made me uncomfortable.
I want to come back to this because there's something that I learned in researching the backstory of this movie and who almost directed it, which you guys might know, that I won't spoil, but we'll come to later. But I think speaks so much to the way this movie implicates the viewer and like pulls you into this double game of you're watching both the show and the movie at the same time. But like, we will get to that. But for me, what makes this movie really important is that like, we talk a lot here about movies that are prescient, but this is like a whole level beyond prescient, where it truly pulls off this magic trick where when they were first making the movie, reality TV didn't even exist yet.
The real world. The real world had existed since like 92.
Yes, the real world. That's right. Is the one. Yeah, because they started scripting in, I think, like 94, 95. But it was like they were only vaguely aware of it. And they said they have said at least that they did not have reality TV in their mind when they set out to make it. And then it like comes out as they are starting filming and then they start to wrap it in. But like since then, as reality TV has developed, the movie just looks like it tracks more and more what reality TV ended up becoming. And like you referenced this, Aaron, like the era of digital surveillance, 15 years after this movie comes out, it feels like Truman Show is about that. Mm-hmm. And like now it feels like Truman Show is about being online. It feels like Truman Show is about existing in social media and the internet, which are things that did not exist when they made the movie, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm. I think it also is a reflection of the sort of end point of being stuck in an ideological vacuum. So like if you, like, let's say you're a Fox News viewer, you know, you hear all the time about like people who are people's parents who started watching Fox News and like went crazy. They kind of exist within the world that Fox News has created for them. Like everything out there is dangerous. Like the cities are scary. San Francisco's on fire. And if you leave us, like we're the ones telling you about it. And if you leave, you are in danger.
Oh yeah.
And it's sort of a way to keep attention as a commodity. Like I feel like media outlets that have an ideological bent, present company excluded, create a sort of a vibe, basically, that you are, if you do not listen to these people, if you do not stay in here, you lose your community, you subject yourself to danger. And so it sort of reminded me of like being a Fox News viewer.
It's interesting.
It's funny, like going even one step beyond that, take it even outside of media, like as just a metaphor for living in a controlled state of some kind, whether it's an authoritarian state or just an invasive planned community where everybody's in each other's business. I think there's like an interesting choice just in the way the movie deals with Truman's experience, which is from the very first shot of the movie, he's fucking miserable.
Yeah.
He is miserable when you meet him.
But he doesn't know why.
He doesn't totally know why. But you said this, like, he realizes he's in a TV show. And I think there are people that would say that that's not true, that he in some way knew. The first time you see Truman, he's making a TV show.
Right.
He's making a movie to the mirror, right? And you see in flashback how he ended up in this position. But by the time we've met him, he is already confused by how he feels. He's unsure of his surroundings. He doesn't believe it. And then you start to see that this like controlled system is actually pretty incompetent. Like it's an authoritarian state that's actually pretty incompetent. There's lights falling. The radio suddenly goes into narrating his experience. The rain doesn't totally work. People are breaking in all the time. Like this is a failing fascist state that is slowly crumbling around him at year 35 or whatever the year is. And it's interesting that those things aren't what changes him. He is already ready to go before those things happen. He is talking about the first time we see him at work, he's trying to find out where she is in Fiji, not trying very hard,
right?
But he wants out. before the light falls, before he stops the buses, before any of that.
To me, what I read into that, and I think this is what makes the movie so timeless, even as like technology has changed and our media environment has changed, the reason it always feels so current is I think it speaks to this feeling we all have that we are in a kind of world and a media culture that feels very manufactured and distancing and very isolating. And we're all kind of like yearning for this sense of human connection. But at the same time, those same media industries are responding to that by delivering us like faked versions of real connection, whether that's reality TV, whether it's like your Facebook friends that just make us feel more isolated and empty. And I think it's kind of about this feeling that Truman is having, that he's subconsciously aware that the world that he is in is false, that it's isolating him from people, that his connections aren't real. And he's coming to identify what is making him feel that way so that he can break out of this thing that's imprisoning him.
Yeah. And off what you said, Lovett, the fact that he's miserable and he's around other people, we learn that they are actors, right? We know they're actors, and they kind of have their own private miseries as well. So they're coexisting in a space where they're all representing a sort of artificial happiness. But each person behind the scenes, like Meryl, Laura Linney's character, behind the scene is like not, she doesn't like him that much. Like she crossed her fingers when they got married, you know, like, and there's like the break room that he accidentally sees when the elevator doors open. All of these people have their own private lives and private miseries, even though at the beginning Meryl says it's like a lifestyle and this is her, this is her life. It reminds me of like when you log on to Instagram and when you're not feeling good, and you scroll through and you're like, everybody here is fucking walking around with like this fake digital ghost of themselves that is just happy all the time.
We're all in the Truman Show on our phones.
I find something very beautiful about the movie is that he is never, there's a few exceptions, right? Somebody breaks in. Natasha McElhone as Sylvia basically says, this is all fake, this is all fake. These seeds are planted. But he has to build an identity outside of this TV show from inside of this TV show. And the way he does it is by grabbing bits of truth and making a new thing. Like he makes a collage, right? That's what he's always doing. He's always, like, that's what he does. He gets these fake fashion magazines and he painstakingly finds features in them that seem real to him in the form of Sylvia. And he builds a real face from all of these fake faces. And there's something to me beautiful about, there's something very like progressive and anti-fascist in the idea that you can't control information. Even in the most controlled information, a person who yearns for authenticity and freedom will find a way to understand it, even if they don't have the words. And which is why I like the idea, like the whole movie is built around the idea that if he wants to escape, he will. And part of it is having to figure out the words. You know, it's like he's handed this sort of, you know, this, he always handed his stuff that reinforces his what he's supposed to think. And he takes bits of it and tries to make something new out of it. And I always think that was beautiful.
There is something beautiful about he's creating something real and authentic out of the detritus of this fake, false, consumerist, capitalist world.
It reminds me a little bit of like Chinese art that is subversive, that they're able to make despite the fact that they are living in a really controlled state. Like a lot of art that I guess cultural critics make relies on puns. So they'll put together these images that, because Chinese is a tonal language, they mean something different in a different tone.
Oh, yeah. But Ai Weiwei does this.
You see the images together and you're like, oh, so these people are openly doing what Truman did. They're taking pieces that are acceptable, putting them in together into something that communicates something real and outside of the acceptable within their country.
That's great to compare him to Ai Weiwei, and so much smarter than I was going to compare him to Neo from The Matrix. Although I will hold that this movie is just The Matrix, but nicer and less impressive special effects. All right, let's move on to what is the biggest thing this movie gets right. I will just read a quote from Laura Linney that she gave to Vanity Fair 20 years after the movie came out. We would all laugh about how unrealistic some of it seemed. We couldn't quite believe that someone would want to tape themselves so that people could tune in, watch what was considered at the time to be mundane, and see that as entertainment. And then it turned out that that is just what all of our culture is now.
Yeah. Jeez.
Erin, what do you think? What's the biggest thing the movie gets right?
Well, I've been watching a little highbrow television program called Love Island USA recently.
I was going to bring this up too, actually.
Just got back from maternity leave, and you spend a lot of time just kind of sitting at weird times. And so I watched all the episodes. But the line from the film where Ed Harris's character, Christoph, says, "Everything on the show is for sale," like when they're kind of doing the like meta TV interview about the TV show. That's what is happening on Love Island USA. Like after the show, you can go to the Love Island USA store and you can buy the things that the people are wearing. And on Instagram now, that you can tag places to buy things that you see on Instagram. It really was like, yeah, this feels like exactly the way things are now. And I think in 1998, the idea of you being able to like watch the X-Files and go buy a trench coat afterwards, like the exact one that Sully was wearing, is like, that's not that was like science fiction.
Impossible to imagine.
Yeah. And they did it.
It's funny. I was going to bring up Love Island because I thought that this movie presages the way that reality TV kind of blurs with sex work in some ways that are like very uncomfortable. Like there's a reference to Laura Linney sleeping with him despite not liking him at all. Mm-hmm. And that's just like a weird thing to throw out there.
I guess that never happens in the real world. People sleeping with people they don't like.
That's true.
Because they feel like they should.
Yeah, there's also a very of the 90s way in which they handle that, which is they make sure they go to two viewers and one viewer says to the other, you never get to see anything, so that you as the viewer of the Truman Show film can still watch it without being even more disgusted.
Right. And kind of these people are human trafficked into sex work.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. For me, like, it is the voyeurism that is like so that I think was pretty ahead of its time. Mm-hmm. That this is before Big Brother, which again is a lot, I think, more like this than maybe
it was
other
2003 that Big Brother. So it was like 5 years before.
I mean, this is before Survivor, which did change everything and did like introduce a whole genre in a much bigger way. But so the comfort people have with just watching people at their best and their worst and treating it like entertainment and acting as though they have no, like that they aren't involved or that they don't have an obligation because there's a camera between them. Right. You know, like it reminds me of people filming a car crash. I mean, like, you should go help, right? Like, these are all people watching this. Like, will Truman escape? Will Truman escape? Right. Like, people should break in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This place should be torn apart. This is a moral crime that everybody's watching and everybody knows it. And I just think they're like, yeah, but it's so entertaining and it's like really fun.
Right.
Yeah. So like if you're a utilitarian, you're like, okay, the amount of happiness that I am deriving from this person's unhappiness combined with all the other happiness means that it's justifiable.
Yeah. And I can always count on you to bring the effective altruist viewpoint to any podcast
we're
on, which I appreciate.
Thank you so
much. I hadn't watched Truman Show in a while and I never watched it like this, which was like, I was really trying to watch it closely, you know, and when he sees his father on the street, and they grab him on the bus and he goes away and he's just standing there alone. If you look behind him, sitting over the arches of the city is a Latin phrase and it's one for all for one.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
And I do think that like idea that like when what Laura Linney says at the beginning, I consider it a blessed life. His name is Christoph. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There is something religious.
Oh,
there's a fundamentalism to this, that there's a kind of, we are all engaged in a product of showing you the value of a traditional revanchist way of living. Mm-hmm. And together we are creating this and showing how magical and powerful this is through this figure that we all worship and control.
So it's very much like a Mormon housewife, like blog, like Ballerina Farm, seriously, because she's made a character that she's put, I don't know if you guys have been following along with the whole Ballerina Farm drama.
I have not.
But she is this beautiful former ballerina who went to Juilliard for dance. So she was like nothing to sneeze at, lived in New York City, meets this fucking guy who whose dad happens to own JetBlue. They get married when she's like right at the end of her school career. She doesn't really get a career after she goes to move to his homestead with him in rural Utah. And now they have like seven kids and she's 34. I don't know if it's seven. They have a lot of children and she's 34. And there was an interview that she did with a journalist a couple weeks ago where she talked about how there's a little bit of sadness that seeps through, like in the interview. And then once the interview came out, people started rewatching clips that she'd put online and they were like, oh, my God, this woman's story is actually sad. Like she is like imprisoned within this life. Like her ballet studio got turned into a homeschool classroom. Like all of these things, like she's actually sad. So it made the audience that had previously been consuming her stuff like, maybe with a little bit of jealousy or like, get a load of this fucking liar, you know, that sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, they're like, oh, she doesn't even have a nanny. This is what she's doing all day. She's got kids hanging off of her. She didn't get to dance. Now they feel good in like having uncovered the truth. And it sort of reminds me of like the children themselves don't feature that much as like other parents who have like influencer careers. But it made me think of sort of more exploitative influencers who take their children and just make that put them online from the time that they're born and profit from it, and the kids don't really have any say over it, and there's videos of them crying, and now there's kids that are teenagers who have basically grown up online. It seems like they're both promoting an idyllic sort of Mormon hetero like prolific with children lifestyle, but they're also covering up the harm that they're doing to the children at the center of it.
I do think there's a version of this movie that really leans into the religious iconography and symbolism of it. Like the fact that Christoph is clearly supposed to be a God figure, kind of like you're saying, implies that Truman is the Jesus figure.
Or Job.
But there is a version of this movie that portrays like Truman as the Jesus who sacrifices himself, but for our entertainment, and that the like Christ figure that we won in 1998 America is someone who will give us 24 hours of reality TV, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Out here, if you're doing nothing, you're doing everything right. Though on a cruise with Norwegian, even if you're doing nothing, you're still basking in the warm sun, enjoying the peaceful ocean waves, you're breathing. Don't forget about breathing. Definitely need to be breathing. So you get to do nothing or everything, but you still need to be breathing. It's like really important.
Experience the difference with cruises to Alaska, the Caribbean, and Europe. Norwegian Cruise Line. It's different out here. Visit NCL.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Norwegian Cruise Line ships registry with Bahamas and USA.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
There's one scene in particular that I really took as speaking to me of like a thesis statement of the movie that I found really powerful. It's the scene where Noah Emmerich is on the dock with Truman. And we're just kind of starting to, as the viewer, really starting to understand that he's in a TV show and how the TV show works. And we see Ed Harris for the first time cut in to feed Noah Emmerich lines as he's trying to console Truman, who's worried that something terrible is happening. So let's play the clip.
The point is, I would gladly step in front of traffic for you, Truman.
The last thing I'd ever do is lie to you.
And the last thing that I would ever do is lie to you.
it's a heartbreaking scene. Mm-hmm. He's so isolated. The person who he's turning to in this time of need is just using him and turning against him. I also found it, like, I read it as kind of symbolic of Noah Emmerich as a stand-in for popular entertainment and our media culture, who is lying to us in specifically by promising authenticity, and that authenticity is kind of the big lie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I actually think there's a way in which the movie indicts us in that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because what is the ultimate sin that causes Truman to leave? It's not that he's surveilled 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that Laura Linney didn't really love him even, or that his friends aren't real, or the town isn't real, or that they scared him to believing his father is dead. Their biggest sin was a production mistake, which is they cast the wrong girl as his love interest.
Mm-hmm.
He just wants to go on a date with the girl he was attracted to,
mm-hmm.
who he felt a connection with. That's what he wants. He like tilts at the idea that Fiji's very far away, and he tries at one point to go to Chicago, but he has one obsession, which is he had a love at first sight moment with someone who, as far as we know, was an activist from the day she arrived and had a plan to try to get to Truman.
Right.
And when they're down by the water, you can watch that scene in two ways. You can watch it as a genuine connection between these two people, even though he's supposed to be falling in love with Laura Linney. But he makes some very silly, childish jokes, right? He's like, pizza with extra plankton, Luigi, right? Mm-hmm. It's awful. It's the kind of joke you'd make if you've only seen censored content and you've been surrounded by actors. And she laughs and she loves it. And she lets him kiss her.
Mm-hmm.
And she then says, they're coming, they're coming. This is all a show.
Right.
Then she delivers her message. And we never really hear her speak again to Truman. We see her talk to Christoph. Mm-hmm. She doesn't say, I love him. I want to see him. She is political. Mm-hmm. She has a message. Get him out of here. I have an agenda. I went there as part of my agenda, and I still have that agenda. And when she's happy that he's leaving because he's in love with this person he's made up in his mind.
Who hasn't seen in 10 years, 15 years.
And we are so drawn up in it. I don't think anybody, when he runs out of there, you're not thinking he's going to run up to her and she's going to go, whoa, 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 whoa,
yeah.
Right? That could very well be what would happen. They don't actually know each other. They hung out for an hour running.
Mm-hmm.
And while he made dumb jokes that she laughed at because she was on television, right? But we are so swept up in a narrative that I think is ultimately false because we were watching The Truman Show too. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
about that.
I was really left conflicted about the relationship because I think the way that you're supposed to read it is that she is someone who really loves him and that he senses that genuine. I agree with you. But I think that at least superficially you're supposed to read it as she really loves him and he is drawn to that because no one else in his life actually cares for him. They're all acting except for her.
I have two pieces of trivia.
Okay.
Because I read up on the trivia. One, the script was, or a version of the movie was written with Truman as a teenager. And then when Jim Carrey signed on, so think about that as if that character were a teenager, it would make a lot more sense that they would think they were in love after hanging out for an hour and that she would be waiting for him after they leave the set. So that's one thing. The second thing is, and I think it contributes to the sort of stark, cold relationship between Christoph and Truman, and also the God allegory thing, is that Ed Harris and Jim Carrey never were on set together. They did not meet when they were filming this, much like an absent God in people's lives. They think that he's up there. And
irony of that is that I kind of agree with you, John, that I don't think Natasha McElhone's character really cares for him. It's political. I think Christoph's character does. There's a couple of shots where I think we're supposed to believe that he really loves Truman.
Is
trying to drown you not normal dad behavior?
Well,
that was just standard how they showed their love.
So I think that two things elevate this movie. And if you change them, the movie would feel different even if you didn't change anything else. One is the fact that there's Philip Glass music, which is...
Yes. And Philip Glass himself is in the movie.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's the keyboardist.
He's the keyboardist.
I missed that. Yeah. Oh, that's so fun.
The other is that Ed Harris was a last-minute recast of Dennis Hopper.
Yes, would have been such a different movie. Yes.
Would have been such a different movie. And
I know.
It would have been the clip, if we have the clip of the moment where the executive says you can't kill him.
It's the best part of the movie, I think.
Give me some lightning. Again. Hit him again. God, thank Christ. The whole world is watching. We can't let him die in front of a live audience.
He was born in front of a live audience.
I am telling you for the last time.
How close is he?
Very close.
Capsize him. Tip him over.
Damn you, Victor!
No, you can't. He's tied himself to the boat.
Shut up!
He's going to drown. He doesn't even care.
Do it. Do it!
So what I like about that is it's one of the only lines that actually doesn't work. Because the Christoph we see that Ed Harris embodies, which of course Ed Harris plays him as a cerebral, aloof genius, is you can't kill him on television. Why? He was born on television. That's a Dennis Hopper line.
Yeah.
That's a Dennis Hopper straight up villain line.
You see the Dennis Hopper coming through.
And when at the very end of the movie, when, you know, when Christoph says, you're on television, again, that's a Dennis Hopper line.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ed Harris plays him like a kind of distant father, but I like he's called Christoph, not exactly light touch there. And like imagine Dennis Hopper much more as a villain. And there are other little touches that are strange. Like if you look at the feet of Paul Giamatti and the other person in the studio, they're wearing covers on their shoes.
I didn't notice that.
Because they're in Christoph's home.
Oh,
and
he lives in the moon.
He lives in the moon. It's his villain's lair. He comes out in a robe.
Right.
So
we do see that.
He's much more like Ed Harris plays him. They put a fucking beret on him.
Yeah.
I think in the opening scene or maybe later. Ed Harris can make anything feel less broad and silly, which is what he does here, which is amazing, which I think saves the movie.
Yeah.
But imagine it more as you're in the moon evil layer of Dennis Hopper, megalomaniac TV executive. And I feel like then I think that to me makes the whole thing make more sense.
Well, you know, what I think is interesting about the ending part where he like is not afraid with him dying on television and then ultimately he survives. As audience members watching this, his survival sort of vindicates us. It's like we're forgiven for watching this
because
he made
it. Participated in his emancipation.
But
now.
He made it. Like if Christoph would have actually killed him, then the audience would be forced to reckon with their own sins. But him getting out was like a form of forgiveness for the audience. Like we're able to forgive ourselves because he survived. So it had a happy ending. So it's all fine.
The way that I read Ed Harris playing that scene, both the scene where he's trying to kill him and then the scene afterwards where he's talking to him, is that he kind of wants Truman to defy him. He wants Truman to go through the storm, to overcome the storm, and to like really take agency over his own life and to do that so that he can then choose voluntarily to live on the show, which is all Ed Harris really wants.
I think Ed Harris worked on you. Picture the same lines in Dennis Hopper. It's a person.
It's a different movie.
But I think what's happening in that scene is he was fucking lying. He could leave anytime he wants. You're free to go. Like he loves the TV show. He loves the power. Cue the sun. He loves being in charge. He loves controlling this man. It's parental. It's a bit psychosexual. He owns him. And he tells himself it's okay because Truman can actually leave whenever he wants. But when he gets right up to the edge, he really is willing to kill him. It's luck that he survives. Like we're not shown any magical technology. There's no divers that we see. Why wouldn't he drown? He didn't, luckily.
Well, what if he did? Like, right. You know what? And what if, like, you know, but what if they're dead? M. Night Shyamalan twist. If Truman had died and what we were seeing after the boat, when he's like leaning backwards over the boat and he gets up, what if that's all some sort of like fantasy that we get to see? Because, I mean, the movie doesn't tell us that, but it would have been a different film, but it's something that they could have chosen to do.
Well, let's play the clip where Ed Harris debates Natasha McElcombe.
He's not a performer. He's a prisoner. Look at him. Look at what you've done to him.
He could leave at any time. If his was more than just a vague ambition, if he was absolutely determined to discover the truth, There's no way we could prevent him. I think what distresses you, really, caller, is that ultimately Truman prefers his cell.
To me, this is about, obviously, the central tension of the movie. Can Truman bring himself to acknowledge what he knows deep down and to break out of this? And I really read this as a metaphor about, like, can we as a society realize what we have trapped ourselves in with all of the fake manufactured culture and all the isolation we have to make the decision to break out of it? That's how I read it.
Mm-hmm.
No, I like that.
I also saw it as like a meta story about celebrity in general. Like if you're a celebrity and you have an entire apparatus that depends on you retaining your celebrity status, then yeah, it's sort of, it's a little bit like a mini Truman Show around each like A-lister.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, I hinted at this earlier. The director who almost helmed this movie, and I think you can really feel his influence coming through, especially what you're talking about, the like voyeurism in the sense that we're complicit in this guy's murder and torture. It was originally going to be a Brian De Palma movie, which makes so much sense.
That makes
sense. The voyeurism, you're seeing things through the camera. It was also supposed to be a lot darker, where it was supposed to be like Truman is a bad guy and you don't initially know if it's a show or not. You're just watching things through the camera and he's gradually realizing that he's in this like twilight zone.
So like Lost Highway, but more coherent.
Yes. Or They Live.
Yeah.
Or like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Like it kind of at moments is a 70s paranoid thriller. Mm-hmm. That scene where he's on the road and he's starting to realize that everyone around him is an actor and he runs into the elevator shaft and he stops the bus. I was also a little confused about the stopping the bus thing. Like, yeah, if I stand in front of a bus, put my hand up, the bus stops too. That doesn't mean it's a show.
I think what he's realizing that he can't totally articulate is when he does unusual, strange things, nobody says a word to him.
Right. Something's wrong that everybody's in on.
And he doesn't totally get it right there. Like there's one point, I think, right before then or right after that, where he darts left and runs right. Mm-hmm. Achieves nothing. Doesn't help him at all. But on some level, he knows he's supposed to be keeping something, someone on their toes. Mm-hmm. And he can't really explain why. How could he?
Right.
But yeah, there is that idea that like some level he's always known. You know, there's so many things that just they're not that good at their jobs. They push them up against signs. They're constantly, the fact that Meryl at this moment of their tension, she pushes Mococo drink. the fact that they don't have enough extras to not have a couple people walking by, even when he's sitting in the car, they're lazy by the time we get to this. Mm-hmm. It's a declining fascist state.
Right.
It's a fascist state that doesn't have the enthusiasm or energy anymore. Mm-hmm. The it's creaking and breaking. And like his humanity is kind of busting through. I was like that.
Yeah. To me, once I learned that, I was like, oh, this is, it's Blowout, basically.
Yeah.
I do think I am happy that Peter Weir took it over. The like happy uplift that he gives it obviously made it much more palatable, so a lot of people saw it. But it's also just like the combination of those two. It really reminded me of AI, the way like you can see the Kubrick peeking through all the Spielberg and they just like work so well together. Yeah. I just thought that was great. Okay, we should move on to our second category here, 45 minutes of the podcast. But the last thing this movie got right. Not a lot of people know this, but the producer of this show, Emma Elick Frank, actually produces it from a giant fake moon suspended several hundred feet above the studio that she lives in.
Nice. Is that why we've never seen her?
That's why she never comes out, except but sometimes she will whip up a big storm if she doesn't like your reads.
And it is weird. Once in a while, I'll see that she's looking at a video of Favreau on her screen. She'll just caress. She'll caress the screen. It's deeply uncomfortable.
I think it's sweet. I think it's nice. All right. What is the biggest thing this movie gets wrong?
The camera technology does not make sense. Like, why are there no motion sensors on them to detect? Why is there no implant in Truman so that when it comes near a camera, the camera turns on? Like, it is Ed Harris is a little bit of an uncreative dictator when it comes to surveilling him constantly.
Oh, he's got to have his hand on every camera. He's not going to trust AI with that.
Sure, but like, you know, they have... Maybe that makes sense. But I think that ultimately it's a better show if, like, there's no chance of Truman escaping because there's some sort of motion sensor or like chip sensor embedded in the cameras.
Sure. Yeah, you would definitely put an air tag on him, I feel, if you did it now.
You put an air tag on him.
One part of this movie that I just like did not track for me is the like domestic assault that happens 2/3 of the way through, where he attacks Laura Linney's character with the fucking potato peeler.
So
come on,
I watched it very closely for that reason.
Okay,
and she comes at him with this. Mm-hmm. He actually, when you first see it, it looks like what he's doing is swinging around and holding it up to her. But again, because I was watching it closely, he's actually they thought about this.
Okay,
because they really do try to protect Truman. Which I actually think is a flaw of the movie. Like,
he's too good?
Yeah, I think that doesn't hold up. Sure. I don't think a person under these circumstances wouldn't be more fucked up than this. You'd be so much more fucked up than this person.
Right.
But you can see that he's really, what he's trying to do is get it away from her. He's trying mm-hmm. to pull, he doesn't actually, he gets it. And then if you watch, he kind of takes it away, mm-hmm. but it does look like that.
It feels a little domestic assault.
Well, no, it is, but that's why she says, I can't work under these conditions.
Yeah.
Like he's clearly at the edge. He's not a person who wants to hurt anybody, but he's terrified and confused and she clearly hates him.
But her saying, I can't work under these conditions indicates that it's not the first time that she's felt like something bad could happen to her. You know what I mean? Like she's not, I don't know. It seems to me like there's there's been a lead up to this, and this is just kind of the culmination of something she feared would happen.
I mean, this has got to be untenable for everybody. How could this not be hell on earth to be on this show?
Well, she also doesn't say, I'm scared. She doesn't say, get me out of here.
It's unprofessional.
She says it's unprofessional. I don't like my scene partner. He's taking this scene too far.
Great.
And there's something so chilling about the fact that the friend still leads with the beer.
Yes.
He puts the beer through the door first. Like, they're all watching this, right? Mm-hmm. They're so cavalier, but they've also ruined Laura Linney's life. They've ruined that character's. Like, she lives a terrible life. They don't care what happens to her either, to the point where they're all watching this unfold. If they're worried about her, they're worried about her less than they are the show. Mm-hmm. They only care about the show. So he still leads with, they don't rush in and end the scene. They have him go in with beer.
Right, turn mm-hmm. it into a nice moment and then bring Dad out.
Yeah, bring Dad out.
Let's play we have a clip from that scene, the Coco clip.
Why do you want to have a baby with me? You can't stand me.
That's not true. Why don't you let me fix you some of this new Mococo drink? All natural cocoa beans from the upper slopes of Mount Nicaragua, no artificial sweeteners.
What the hell are you talking about? Who are you talking to?
I've tasted other cocos. This is the best.
What the hell does this have to do with anything? Tell me what's happening!
And that's the scene. That's the moment.
Yeah, that's the moment. Yes. I was going to say, I think that he is bringing the perfect amount of comedic and dramatic delivery to so many of these scenes that would be like really overwrought otherwise, or if he played it for laughs too much. And he got it right for exactly one movie, and then he tipped too much in the other direction.
That was a laugh out loud moment for me in the movie. I laughed out loud.
So funny. I also Eternal Sunshine.
Yes, he's
okay,
good in that.
Okay, that's true. Eternal Sunshine, he's good.
So there's the scene earlier where Laura Linney has to go do the amputation because of the elevator disaster. And what's great about that scene... what's great about that scene is if she is one thing, mm-hmm. she is a professional. She is in character. And so if you watch that scene, all the other people around her are confused. They're not sure how to do this. But she doesn't. Mm-hmm. She's not confused at all. She may be worried about what's going to happen, but she is his wife and she is a nurse. And so she is running the surgery while this other guy's pretending to be a nurse and this other guy's pretending to be a surgeon and they don't really know what to do. But if you watch her, viable, believable.
Mm, yeah. She's got kind of the master role. I mean, she's like the number two to Kristoff.
But the only mistake she makes, the only choice she seems to make that's wrong as an actor is that one. The only time she really does something that her character wouldn't do mm-hmm. is when she says the Mococo drink thing. She manages to get a lawnmower. She knows she has to get a lawnmower add in when he's fixing the lawnmower. And she doesn't, I think we should get one of those new Elk rotaries. And then she walks upstairs. She gets the add in. She goes. But that one, it was a mistake. And like, is she cracking? Is she angry at him? Does she really want out? Right? Like, why? She's in character 24 hours a day, basically.
Mm-hmm. I think it's because she feels the artifice falling away. If her whole thing is that she is a professional, once it ceases to be a show, she doesn't have a role anymore. Whereas the Noah Emmerich character seems to understand how to play this manipulation game, both as an actor, but also as someone who is just there to like handle and manage and manipulate Truman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't feel great about, like, Truman's emotional infidelity from Laura Linney's character. Like, the whole through line is, like, he's in love with Natasha McElhone because they have this genuine connection. I know we're supposed to be sympathetic because we know their marriage is fake, but he doesn't know that. Mm-hmm. He's been cheating on her in his mind for years.
That's
true. We're canceling his ass. That's it.
There's such an arrogance to the production, which is, you know, Laura Linney is someone they clearly wanted to cast for a variety of reasons. They have this other background actor, Natasha. Mm-hmm. They have an actual genuine moment together. Better producers would adjust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he has an infatuation with this person. Let that play out. Keep them both. Let's see where this season goes.
Yeah, Laura, very Love Island.
The budget is limitless. They seem to have bulldozed 3/4 of the valley to build this fucking dome. But that's actually something that doesn't make sense or hold up, which is...
Where is this?
Where?
Yeah. Well, it's above the Hollywood sign, so it's basically Burbank has been domed.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's fine.
All of this was invested in and began construction before the baby was born or around when the baby was born, so there's not a single viewer. The upfront costs for the pilot of this show are is like probably the GDP of France.
Yeah.
No, so like Apple could do it.
That's
Apple
true.
Could do it.
Yeah.
Apple could do it.
I mean, they've plowed enough money into Apple TV Plus. Come on, they could afford something like this.
They're dumping money and they don't care. They don't care where it goes. They don't care if it comes back. They don't care.
And Apple, thank you.
Yeah.
Keep that money flowing. All right, Hollywood.
I enjoyed Macbeth and the other shows exist. Okay, moment you most...
Hey,
that's
hey,
right.
Hey,
there's,
hey,
that is, by. Pound for hey, pound, the best original content, hey. And I'm saying that with sincerity.
Apple TV is good. Apple TV Plus is good. More Apple TV Plus.
It's fine.
More tech companies paying for television programs. There are a lot of writers in this town that aren't working. More shows... More production in L.A.? Hey, Newsom, Karen Bass, I want more tax credits for shooting in L.A. I'm sick of Vancouver standing in for American cities. I want to make things here. Thank you.
Where did Severance shoot? Not here, right?
No, but that is a great show.
That's a good show. That's a good show. And Ben Stiller,
turns
big
out,
fan of Crooked Media, so we have to.
Damn right.
Ben Stiller, yes. Turns out, one of the best directors of our
He's
time.
Ben Stiller, one of the best directors. Jason Bateman, one of the best directors. Who knew? And you know who actually did know? I'm sorry, this is an aside.
Okay.
But Ethan Hawke has a very smart diatribe about this. About how film schools and film studies doesn't focus enough on acting as a craft, focuses on directing and lighting and editing and the craft of filmmaking, but not the craft of acting. But it's actually the great actors who go on to become the great directors. Mm-hmm. And that should tell us something about what movies are. Like, we talk about it as a director's medium, but it's also an actor's medium. And I think he's making a really good point.
Yeah. Are we sure that the best directors are actors?
Many of the great directors started out as actors, or are actors. Orson Welles.
Yes, that's a good one.
To name one.
Yeah.
I'll give you Clint Eastwood. We'll give you Ben. How about Ben Stiller?
Yeah.
How about Jason Bateman? The four great directors. Eastwood, Welles, Bateman.
That's it. That's the Mount Rushmore. Everybody does
Stiller.
That.
No, actually, this brings up something I was thinking about as I was watching this movie. When Ed Harris's
thank
character.
You for, thank I appreciate
you,
that.
Thank you.
Pull my string, I'll talk.
Which I think would make a great limited series, perhaps dual produced by Crooked and Apple TV Plus.
Like, where are you going with this?
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
There's money in the hills.
So I was watching this, and Ed Harris's character, Christoph, talks about how what you're seeing from him is real. Everything around him is fake, but you're seeing something real. And it reminds me of a lot of the ways that male directors used to terrorize actresses because they wanted them to have like a real react, like Shelley Duvall on the set of The Shining. Kim Basinger on the set of 9 1/2 Weeks was apparently just like fully abused. Mm-hmm. There are so many examples of that. Alfred Hitchcock famously was abusive toward actresses because there was this kind of sexist belief that like men could act and they just needed to have women show the real
women
emotion.
Had to be provoked.
Yeah. I think in a way Truman is kind of like feminized, like those actresses were and infantilized and believed that like in order for something like the fake, it is morally okay to create a real terrified or scary emotion in a fake environment. And it just, it reminded me of poor Kim.
You know what else this movie gets completely and totally wrong? Christoph says people don't want pyrotechnics. They don't want special effects. No, sir. They do.
Oh my God.
They do.
I take his point that the thing that they really care about, and you can use the pyrotechnics to pull them in, but what they really want, the best part of Top Gun Maverick, the relationship Tom Cruise and Goose.
Okay.
Or Goose Jr.
Yeah, no, that's what people really came out for. That's why people liked Avengers Infinity, The Final War, because of the human drama.
I'm not counting that.
You're not counting the biggest
absolutely
box
not.
Office?
Correct.
Okay.
See, Ed Harris should have been more creative when it was clear that that Truman was realizing that he was in a fake world. He could have just been like, all right, you know what? Transformers crossover with Truman Show. We're going to make Truman like just thinking about escaping and living in this sense of sadness. And he's invaded by killer robots. Not so sad anymore, are you?
Something this movie is absolutely missing, if it's going to be accurate to the 90s, is crossovers with other shows.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the
All in the Family should show up at some point. They should just be there.
But yeah. this is why I think it's important that we never, ever see any media outside of The Truman Show, because that means we never see any actual criticism of The Truman Show. We just see its fans and we see the show itself. Christoph is not very good. His show is not very good. It's not very interesting. When he decides they're done with Laura Linney, they just introduce a beautiful woman for him to meet at the office. It is boring. He's not willing to push the boundaries. He creates the most boring version of a 1950s television show that he can, but makes one of the characters a real person. Mm-hmm. That's not that good.
He's
right?
A real Ryan Murphy.
No, hey now. Well, people are just catching strays. Ryan Murphy's taking it? That's not fair to Ryan Murphy.
I'm sorry. Absolutely. He's that, but you with it, like, ass. Just outlandish shit. You're just like, oh, really? This is, we're going to hacksaw Ariana Grande to death in episode 3? Oh, so exciting.
I just think it is creative. He's made a lot of interesting, different things. He made Glee in American Horror Story. It's not like one note.
I did enjoy the OJ one.
The OJ one?
Everybody loves
the Versace one.
The Versace one was interesting.
It was insane.
Interesting.
It was insane.
Okay, it was
he made some choices.
Bonkers.
I love that.
Christoph of bonkers plot twist.
Great.
So there is a very funny thing that Peter Weir, the director of this, does with the Christoph character, which is in most cases when we are seeing the movie through the TV show, through the like TV cameras, it's terrible. It looks like the Jerry Springer Show. It's like fast, shitty zooms, and it's like terrible angles from whatever camera they have. Mm-hmm. Except there are two scenes where you see Ed Harris directing the cameras, and then it looks like goddamn Spielberg. Mm-hmm. The scene when he's on the bridge, that crane shot is great. And then you have this low angle of Truman and then the slow zoom in on him. Mm-hmm. And you could tell that Peter Weir was saying, I know this show is supposed to be shit, but if people are thinking about the role of the director as a director, I want them to be impressed.
Well, there's another bit of trivia. So, the writer put together like a show Bible for the Truman Show. So like the actors would know what the show was to the people that watched it. And one of the things about the Truman Show was that it won Emmys. It won a lot of awards. Mm. So it might have felt like a Altman on speed sometimes, but it was supposed to be an award winning show.
Big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $38.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
All right. Moment you most related to personally.
I do think, I if you strip away all the kind of premise, it's about a person in an unhappy relationship that should be happy, mm-hmm. that has everything on paper is right. Everyone is saying the mm-hmm. right things, and everyone is doing the right things, and we're building the right life, and we're going through all the steps, and everybody is on board, and I'm on board ostensibly, and it's just not right. No one's going to make Truman make his life better. Mm-hmm. He has to decide to make his own life better. Mm-hmm. And that's what I related to.
I mean, that's,
to be honest.
I think that's a universal. We've all been in that relationship where it feels false, and it's hard to see that when you're inside of it. And getting to that realization both of it and to do something about it is hard. That's the whole journey.
Yeah. The thing I most related to personally is a lot stupider. it was when Meryl tried to read the ad for Mococo drink during that. I, too, have read ads and have people get mad at me. So
that's so funny. I was thinking the same thing with all the product placement because, like, when I saw this movie as a kid, like, oh, isn't that so funny, trying to find an organic way
to talk about
a product. Yeah. And now I do it secondhand. Yes. I do it all the time.
All the time.
That's why you keep saying Laura Linney is a pro, a professional.
And sometimes
she knows to get the ad reads.
Well, and then sometimes people get mad at me. They get mad at me if I'm talking about something that they don't like or they have information on that I didn't have. I related very, very intensely to doing an ad read. And people got mad.
I really related to the feeling that it is really, really hard to leave the artificial world that has been created to entrap you, created to turn you into money, but has also been made to be really comfortable and mm-hmm. to really ensconce you.
Yeah.
And that, like, the choppy waters that he's trying to sail through at the end to escape, like, I don't know, that could be trying to quit Instagram when you're getting that dopamine rush
or
that
trying
you're worried
to
about
move
losing.
Out of Provo, like trying to leave your the religion you were raised
yeah,
with
right.
trying to leave the ideological, like leaving QAnon, like if you're in QAnon yeah. all your friends are in QAnon and now yeah. you gotta leave and it's gonna suck.
There's a lot of QAnon to this movie,
yeah.
but it also, by the way, it doesn't have to be the culture you have a problem with or that you are ambivalent about. It doesn't even have to come with a judgment. So much of what Truman is trying to do is figure out the hard part isn't like jettisoning your assumptions. The hard part is coming to understand that you have assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
And like we all come to the culture that we grew up in with a bunch of baked in notions of what is immutable, what is not culture,
mm-hmm.
and slowly realizing, actually, wait a second, this way I'm approaching life is a cultural artifact. It's not endemic to me. It's not natural. It's not automatic. It's actually cultural,
mm-hmm.
yeah. whether it's an approach to class or to gender or to what you wear or whatever it might be. Like, the first step is realizing you have an assumption.
Mm-hmm.
And like that to me is like when we meet him, he's already realized, oh, wait a second, I've made some assumptions. And then we watch him slowly kind of discover what those assumptions actually mean. But that to me is what was like sort of interesting about it. Like you can love your life. You can love your culture. You can love everything about it. You could not be ambivalent about it. And you still might not understand how much of it is artifice to you.
Right. Mm-hmm. So much of the movie is him realizing that every day he has been making the choice unconsciously to stay in this world.
Yeah.
Well, and to compare it again to the Matrix, which you did, I mean, there is a way to look at this movie as a story of queerness, of a story of making a decision about heteronormativity and mm-hmm. and how to, if you're okay existing inside of it or if you need to go somewhere else.
Yeah, the other piece of it too is how much of every interaction he's having is either reinforcing how good he has it or making him afraid.
Mm-hmm.
That his boss is like, they're making cutbacks at the end of the year. Oh, Truman, you don't like your job? You got a desk job. I'd kill for a desk job. Planes are dangerous. The world has already been explored. We've got mortgage payments, all of that. It's like the how much of what entraps him is just like the cage is being built every single day, mm-hmm. all the time. That's right. So much of what these characters are doing is just constantly assembling the cage.
Well, and I'm realizing as you're saying this, that so much of that cage is his social position. I mean, I don't know how intentional it is, but there is a way to read this movie as the prison is capitalism, is the thing that he has bought into and locked himself into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't. I mean, there's a buy-in and you got to cash out. Like it's
sure.
It's going to cost you to leave.
I think that's too easy. I think that is a way to look at the prison with your view that's comforting. It's really community.
But the prison is whatever it's whatever in society is imposing on you, right? That you're choosing, that you are born into but have not made the choice to buy into.
Yes, sure. But when his mother says, I'd really love to hold a grandchild before I go, even though she's a young woman. Very sure. By the way, very great commentary in Hollywood that like they always have her with a tissue or she's old. She's a young.
Yeah.
She's a young person. You know, she's not
she's
that
like,
old.
But
she's
37.
Yeah, she's like playing it older. Yeah. But like, sure, you can like say that it is capitalism, but really it's a set of obligations to the people that he loves and mm-hmm. to the status he thinks is important. You know, he wants to study for his finals and they're trying to get him to not study for his finals. He's not mm-hmm. wanting to study for his finals because of capitalism.
Sure.
He likes being in
sure.
school.
No, I'm not saying every single thing. And you're right. When he's like driving away with Laura Linney, the thing that she is invoking is your mom is going to be sad mm-hmm. if you drive away, which is a thing moms be doing.
Yeah. I think about the like religious component of it. Like, I remember when I first decided I was like, maybe not going to be Catholic anymore. I remember going to mass and like having a moment where I was like, oh, I always thought that everyone around here was just also pretending to believe in all this stuff. Like, yeah. Oh, I'm, yeah, but we know that like, yeah, like he didn't really, yeah, that didn't happen. You know, like I remember thinking that and then I was like, oh no, these people are, it was kind of the reverse where it was like, oh, I'm the one that's pretending and these people all actually believe it and I gotta go.
All right, we should move on to most unintentionally revealing moment before Emma comes out of her moon studio and unleashes a storm on us. There's a line from the mom at one point. It's about time they cleaned up the trash downtown before we become like the rest of the country. Just 90s insane politics coming out of nowhere.
Florida.
Yeah, that's true. That's
right. It was shot in a real place in Florida.
But yeah, like that is a sort of the religious and like conservative element of this, that like this is a town, this town's a model.
Yeah,
we keep this Beverly Hills, you mm-hmm. know, like we don't allow the riffraff on our streets. Well, this place is special, this island is special.
And the newspaper headline saying like Europe sucks, don't go to Europe,
best place in America. Like yeah. his desk mate comes across, just like he's on the phone calling Fiji and he picks up back, points at it, it's like, look, we're still number one, just crazy shit.
That was like the USA RNC rhetoric, like America's the best country in the entire world has ever seen. And meanwhile, yeah. half of the people that are excited about watching the speaker have never used their passport, because mm-hmm. not because they can't, because they don't want to use their resources to challenge themselves.
Or, in fairness, there is a lot of good stuff in America.
America's great. In many ways. No. Like the natural beauty of this
USA
place.
USA number one.
Wow, Aaron coming out against the national parks? Man.
I think, no, best in the world. Leave
number
me alone.
Fucking one.
Leave me alone. No, there's
number
a lot.
Number one, baby. Oh,
a lot to sell.
Most medals at the Olympics.
That's
eat
true.
Shit.
That's
eat
true.
Shit.
The American women, yeah, if they would,
decisive.
If they were a whole country, would have been number three.
Wow.
If the American women were just their own country,
let's
they would
freaking go.
Yeah. Let's go, women.
No visa for J.D. Vance, am I right?
Yeah. Okay. So I thought an unintentionally revealing moment was the fact that there's only like one black family in town.
I noticed that.
And everyone is like, that's okay. That's an okay number of black people to be in this town.
It's definitely very late 90s.
And they dressed and acted just like all the white people. And there was no, like, mm-hmm. nobody commented on it, but they were the only ones. And that. Yeah.
Not a lot of cultural diversity in that
But it
town.
Also is like, not just about the 90s, it's also about Hollywood. Like, Hollywood's like, oh, one black family, that should do it. Mm-hmm. Like, that represents what a person would accept as reality in America. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was very revealing that the thing that finally provokes him to rebel against his world and break free is kind of getting divorced. He's kind of our first divorce guy.
Yeah. He gets really into sailing, which I thought was a very divorced guy thing
yes.
to do.
It's very divorced guy to get into sailing and to rebel against the reality of your world, I feel.
Yeah.
I love all the little moments where actors are being actors. Like, yeah. I can't work under these conditions. There's a lot of like when Christoph is in Noah Emmerich's ear, Noah Emmerich doesn't say exactly what Christoph says. He changes it because he's got to make it his own because he's
saw
the character.
That, right.
It's very yeah. actory.
I would step into traffic for you.
He changes it because that's because he is the character.
And you know, I thought it was a good choice.
It's simply a choice.
Right.
We could have seen more from the execs, like giving them notes, like stupid notes that made no
Philip
sense.
Philip Baker Hall.
I know.
How do you not use more Philip Baker Hall in your movie?
I want to see like an extended cut of this movie.
This movie is so tight. Hour 42.
I know. It really is.
It's like
it really
every
is.
Single frame of it,
it really
is like necessary.
Needs to be
it's
in there.
Really yeah. cut. It's I love a movie that is like cut within an inch of its life. Mm-hmm. Every single frame is necessary. It's cool. Uh-huh.
Speaking of which, what would be different if it came out today? I mean, obviously, it would be a social media company instead of a TV company. I think instead of one person, you'd have to have, like, everybody in it. And kind of the, like, mystery of it would be who's in on it and who's not in on it. And I think it would have to be a horror. I think it would have to be They Live, Body Snatchers, Brian De Palma style.
I think it would be... am I pitching? I don't know. what would be happening is people are just going about their lives, whatever, and one day... Our Truman realizes his friend is acting strange, and throughout the course of the film realizes that his friend has now been fired from the show and he's been replaced by an AI approximation. And they are all there to just train the AI, because once the AI is trained, each of them can get fired one by one.
Yeah.
And maybe they're getting murdered if we want to make it horror. They can get fired one by one and replaced by AI approximations of themselves and just exist in perpetuity.
I mm-hmm. like that.
So,
exist in perpetuity.
Yeah.
No royalties.
The show could run
no
forever.
Royalties.
That's right.
No royalties. Yeah. And
I love that. That's perfect.
It's just like, and they never get older.
Right.
And you can do anything to the AI. Like, they never get sick. They don't die.
Right. The Truman is gradually realizing that they're not aging around him.
Exactly. And that, you know, and that he is going to be discarded soon, once the mm-hmm. AI is fully trained.
Oh, that's the realization that he has to, yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be discarded. But that's a different movie entirely. Maybe I should write it.
I love that.
I think
that's great. Yeah,
I really like that.
I do think that the idea of leaving the artificial world would have to play out very differently. And the modern day version would just have to be like much harder and scarier to try to leave everyone.
I think he would die. He would really die.
Yeah.
Or cease to exist, or we would think he died, and then we would see some glimmer that maybe.
Or there would be some mystery where he gets to he opens up the door, and you don't know what he's going to find out there. I mean, mm-hmm. if we didn't know like what's going on in the world outside, there Christoph's lines about the world outside of here is the real hell, and you need to stay here would ring very differently, and there would be kind of a fun mystery to that.
Right, we really are shown a version of the real world that's quite normal.
Mm-hmm.
Like signs we have of it, people are eating, they're at bars, they're having fun, guys in the bathtub having a great time. Yeah, I guess my question is, this movie makes much more sense to us now. It just makes sense. We see mm-hmm. it as like, oh, this makes sense because it follows like the culture that came after it. What did people think of it? Like, why did this exist in 1998? What was it satirizing? What was it making?
That's
confusing.
When they started it, there was no reality TV. And it was just supposed to be, here's a fun premise for a paranoid thriller. Mm-hmm. A guy gradually realizes that the world around him is fake and he's being filmed.
Well, that's not the first time that's ever been represented. Like, there was a Twilight Zone episode where it turns out everyone's faking, but it's not a reality TV show. And mm-hmm. there have been, like, science fiction stories where mm-hmm. somebody realizes they're in a constructed world and everybody around them is acting. But it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could be commentary on fame, but also commentary on the problem of man and a god and free will and a Garden of Eden story or a Lucifer story.
And I love this movie.
Yeah, yeah, I love that
you could read
movie.
That into it. I love it.
I love this
movie.
Well,
Lucifer was like an angel, like God's favorite guy. And then he got proud and he got cast away from heaven.
So Natasha McElhone is Satan?
No. No.
I kind of think that you just persuaded me that she is.
I think that she's pride and Truman is Satan. Truman is Lucifer because Lucifer started as like God's favorite, like right. God, the top angel,
huh.
like his number one dude. And then he got proud and thought he was better than God. And
not Adam being cast out of the or walking out of the.
Could
that'd
be. Either.
That'd be a fun twist in the Garden of Eden. He just decides to leave.
Yeah.
If I don't see you later.
Eve would have a great time. Not having to wash his skid marks out of the fig leaf.
Yeah. Very uncomfortable being naked all the time.
That's not a scenario that I considered in the Garden of Eden. I'll be honest. It never occurred to me.
Adam just left?
No, the skid marks.
Oh, marks on the fig leaf. Yeah.
No, I mean, I guess I see it. It makes sense.
Yeah.
The one other thing that I think would have to be different if this happened now is I think there's no puppet master pulling the strings. I think we just, like, the world we live in now, part of what feels, like, urgent and scary about our politics or about, like, media or how social media works is the very idea that there's no one who's actually in charge and there are no guardrails. So maybe if it's now, you know, the Christoph character, he dies or he goes away or he's replaced by an AI or a machine at some point. And I think the kind of driving momentum would have to be what happens to this world when there's not a producer who's in charge and has a vision.
2001, A Truman Odyssey.
Yeah, that's right. Put Hal in charge. Yes. That's it. That's the one. Nailed it. Okay. True or false? We're going to finish off with our usual round of true or false. I read out a series of quotes or plot points in the movie. You tell me whether that statement is true or false, whether you agree with it or not. This one is Laura Linney, one of the first lines in the movie. For me, there is no difference between a public life and a private life.
False.
False.
Yeah, I think false. Although she was describing the trajectory, the way things were going for people on TV, which I think is true in that sense. Truman says at one point, maybe I'm losing my mind, but it feels like the whole world revolves around me somehow. True, I felt that way.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes it does. It's amazing that it revolves around all three of us. That's just a wild coincidence.
It's a three-body problem.
okay, true or false? Noah Emmerich, when he's on the dock with him, says, who hasn't dreamed of being somebody? But instead of asking you if that's true or false, I'm going to ask you what I think his message was, which is that we all think we desire celebrity, but possessing it would actually be a terrible curse.
I agree with that. I think that it would be absolutely hell to be, like, actually surveilled all the time. Like, Britney Spears circa the early aughts would
be just
terrible.
Nobody seems to come out well out of it.
No. Hillary Duff, that's the only one.
I think we miscategorize. Here's my. This is gonna be my pedantic take.
Do it.
I think we miscategorize ambition as an intellectual or higher level desire, when in fact it is a base and primitive desire, and it is a desire for big, more, great, take up space,
sure,
take up, win, get
maximizing.
It's as simple. I don't think it's that
maximizing.
And we point our intellect and our logic and our story in one direction or another based on talent or enjoyment or opportunity, whatever it might be. But it's the motive is the thing. And some people have more of it. And, you know, I think some of the most tragic reality TV people or people that become famous for bad reasons are people whose ambition far as exceeds their talents.
Sure. Right.
And they can't, there's nothing to be done.
Yeah. True or false, it would be really fun to get an interview on Sea Haven Tonight.
Who hasn't dreamed of being
I would love that hit. That sounds great.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. True or false, if the most beautiful person you have ever met drags you to a remote beach in the middle of the night and they say, we have so little time, they don't want me talking to you, the correct move is to kiss them before they can elaborate.
I think the answer is going to be different if you're a man or a woman here.
That's fair.
Who are you with? What's the gender of the person you're with? For me, it would be a man, and I would probably kick him.
Okay, that seems smart. Yeah.
Yeah, this movie also suffers from another thing that The Matrix suffers from, which is I can't explain it. I can't explain it. Try for 5 seconds. Try for five goddamn seconds. Why
no
are you not?
No time to explain.
No time to explain. You can't understand The Matrix until you see it for yourself. Yeah, tell me. We're all computers plugged into a giant thing. This is a reality. This is a simulation. You're on a television show. You know that television show you watch? You're in one. You're in one of those. This is a big giant dome. Go in one direction and don't stop because you'll hit the end of the dome. I gotta go. My name is Sylvia so-and-so and this is where I'm from. Don't listen.
She didn't do a very good...
You know
she
who sucks in that moment?
You know who did do a good
fucking
job explaining it? The guy who pops out of the Christmas present?
Yes.
He was actually pretty succinct.
Yeah.
You're on television.
True or false from Sylvia. Everybody knows everything you do. They're pretending. Everybody's pretending. It's fake. It's all for you. Sometimes it does feel like that.
That's what manners are. Everyone's just pretend. There's a agreed upon set of rules that we are like, okay, this isn't naturally how we act.
I don't agree with that.
You don't?
I don't.
You naturally like...
No, I do not think the opposite of what you would do naturally is not necessarily fake.
No, I don't think
manners.
I think it streamlines, like it takes a behavior and it tweaks it. So it's like, this is how we're all behaving. Mm-hmm. You would behave somewhere adjacent to this.
But this gets, so what? I have made a choice. My choice is, I just because I'm being polite is not less real. It is the disciplined choice to try to present myself in a way have a better interaction with you is not fake.
Okay. I guess a better way to put it is like HR speak. Like you're in a meeting and people are talking about, like, you know, some deliverables and like things that people don't normally, you wouldn't ever write that down in an email to your mom. Like, aren't there things that you would never say at work that you say in front of people that you're more comfortable with?
Of course.
Okay, so there you are. There it is. It's like there's a level of artifice to the way. I definitely don't.
No, I agree. I'm thinking about it. Yeah, I agree.
What are you two talking about? I have no idea.
There's a public version of you. There's a work version of you. There's a family version of you. And hopefully they're all pretty close to each other. But there are things that you would say in front of your partner that you would never say in front of your coworker.
So this is what I'm saying is there is a work version of you. There's a home version of you. There's a partner version of you. Everyone's relation, the voice they use in their couple, right? Like, we all have a voice we use when we're just alone with our partners. It's a crazy voice. It's completely, none of us have ever heard each other that voice.
Yeah, right.
That doesn't mean this voice is fake. Just because there's a voice that is reserved for a certain context that is natural and freeing that you'd be ashamed or embarrassed to display in front of others doesn't mean the other voices you use that are more measured or controlled are fake. They're just different.
You're hiding certain parts and you're revealing other parts. I didn't say fake, but it's like you're not ever showing your entire self to anybody at any given time.
Of course not. Of course not.
Okay, so there's a level of... Okay, never mind.
Okay, so we're saying that one is true.
Yes.
Moving on. True or false, if you ever discover that your world is an elaborate conspiracy to trap you and you decide to break free, you should bring along the fake spouse who was in on it from the beginning. I'm going to say true because every road trip needs a co-pilot.
It is interesting. He never tries alone till the very end.
And he brings Laura Linney knowing that she was in on this from the beginning.
It's very confusing that in the first time we see him try to find, like, he had this interaction with her, Natasha, a decade earlier or whatever, some length of time.
Yeah,
and we know that they've been married for at least 5 years, or they've been together for at least 5 years. And the first thing he's doing, he's calling fucking the directory assistants for names in Fiji. Like, that's how little work he'd done up until that point. Mm-hmm. Sort of embarrassing, Truman.
True or false, in any marital dispute, a great way to break the tension, a little product placement, a little ad read.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I think that's right.
Absolutely.
That's a podcaster's trick that we don't give up easily, but it works every time.
I think that actually sometimes when you're in a little tense moment, the best thing you can do is just start saying restaurants.
Yeah.
let's get out of this. But you know what I love? I love this Chinese restaurant.
Chinese,
and then all of a sudden you're talking about dinner.
Yeah.
And it's actually real. It works.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Can we have Green Dragon for dinner? Because that's his favorite place. And he's always like, oh, okay, fine. We're not fighting anymore. Yes, we're getting Chinese.
This is some good tips, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. True or false, this is a Jim Carrey quote he gave a few years later to Vanity Fair. Quote, that's what I see as the ultimate lesson of the Truman Show. When that false life is given up, when what everybody else wants from you and of you is given up, then you walk into the everything. You become the everything. There's no limitations anymore. What is he talking about?
I don't know.
I don't know, but it's true. I agree. Jim, I agree.
It sounds like something Jared Leto would say, honestly.
I can hear the giant beard that I'm sure he had grown for that interview.
That's a beautiful notion that we never see what's on the other side of the dome because it's everything.
That's true.
The world
that
is everything.
Is nice.
I like that.
Yeah. There is a little twist in that quote where he's like, people want so much from you. And it's like, I think we're talking about Jim Carrey now. I don't think we're talking about Truman Burbank anymore.
I'm always talking about Jim Carrey.
Did you know on set they were not allowed to use lines from other Jim Carrey movies? Like, the crew was told not to say, all righty then.
Honestly, good fucking rule. Give that guy a break. That is a good rule for sure.
Okay, true and false. Last one. Famous line from Christoph. We accept the reality of the world with which we are presented. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely true.
True. Pals, this was great.
This was so fun.
This was
such
fun.
A great time.
It was a good one.
Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Offline Movie Club is a Crooked Media production. It's written and hosted by me, Max Fisher. It's produced by Emma Illich Frank, mixed and edited by Charlotte Landis, with audio support from Kyle Seglin and Vasilis Fotopoulos. Jordan Katz and Kenny Siegel take care of our music. Thanks to Ari Schwartz, Madeline Herringer, and Adrian Hill for production support.
Listen to me, Max. There's no more truth outside of the studio than there is in here. It's the same lies.
I gotta run to daycare,
guys. It's the same
deceit.
That was good. The world out
that
there
was fun,
is the
yeah.
It was
fun. I mean, am I being real? Am I being fake? I don't know.
I'm
just being polite. Who knows?
That's the thing. I don't know either.
I don't know.
But my point is that our polite selves, I guess all I'm just getting at is that our polite selves are us. That if you spend 8 hours a day being your polite self.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.